Well, it looks like the OND Bank construction has started there on Kirkwood. When should residents expect the graduate portion hotel that to start going up too?
Yeah, I think they'll start this summer and see some significant progress even by the time students return.
Does the city need to start doing anything in that area to prepare for that? That's pretty much private development?
Yeah, I was going to say, mostly contained. There will be street closures at times. Every construction requires different things. If you look at 17th and College right now, that construction project of the apartment complex has resulted in a lane closure. When the county parking garage across the street from City Hall begins, we'll see actually meter removal and parking spaces will be taken up by construction equipment. So everyone depends on the situation and sometimes just in the phases. What we try to do is work to get those things to be as short a time frame as possible. The other big one, it may have already started, I don't remember if it has or not, and that's Jordan, the university construction. If it hasn't already, it'll be closed so that the university can do sort of a hyper construction there and get it done in time for, I think it might not get done in time for classes, but we hope to.
When we talk about parking, there's a new little wrinkle that I saw about a month or so ago. I think it was after we talked about a new downtown parking garage that was approved right behind the county jail, although that's not a public parking garage, is that correct?
Right, publicly owned, but not a public facility, so far as today. Now, that doesn't mean that in the future they won't open it up in the evenings, but right now it's designed to be a county employee parking facility to replace the fenced-in parking lot that's been there forever, and that will allow the county to move its employees that have been shuttled from the convention center to the Justice Building. And now there was talk about whether or not that would be publicly available, and my guess is that if that decision will be made after the building's done.
I think one of the items of point was, is that the best spot to put a garage, considering there really isn't room for the county jail or the court system to expand down the road? What's your opinion on that garage and that spot of the city?
Yeah, I'll say in part, I don't have much of an opinion because it's a county project, not a city project. But in terms of what I know from having heard from county officials, it is obviously first and foremost a parking facility for its employees. And as a governmental entity that has parking space for its employees within walking distance, I certainly understand their desire to do that. I think it's an amenity for their employees. It's a safety consideration for employees. I think more so what we all need to keep in mind is the one time that there is a problem in that jail, whether it be the release of some chemical, whether it be a fire, whatever, if construction that might need to occur, anything that might happen, they just experienced the sewage leak. And if you have to evacuate people, both employees and prisoners, from that jail right now, there's a fenced in, chain link fence in that lot, and what they want to do is have some emergency overflow space for evacuation purposes, and that parking facility will have space to do that. So in part, they were trying to accomplish a couple of missions, and I think they've done that.
Last month, we did talk a little bit about the parking situation in terms of the convention center, and that frees up some space that these county employees are parking over at the convention center. And then now with the allocation of TIF money that happened a month or so ago, does any of that go toward that possible expansion of the Monroe County Convention Center?
No, not specifically. It could be. There still is money available there. There are other funding sources that are available there. There's been talk over recent years of that parking space that's used by the county right now. Perhaps that could exchange hands. The city could take that over. There's even been discussion of the city taking over the convention center, which is funded through a county tax now. Years from now, I think we will see a city-owned convention center. It's something that serves the center of town. It's more in line with the city's mission in terms of tourism and making downtown a destination attraction. And it's logical. Now, there are a lot of complications involved, not the least of which is I believe you would have to change state statute in order to allow the funding mechanism to flow to the city. Otherwise, you'd have to do an MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, and that carries with it different complexities, and it would be possibly a year-to-year thing. And I think if I was making that decision, I'd want a lot more stability than a written agreement a year-by-year. You'd want to have ownership.
Moving to something a little bit more current, in the Herald Times today, there was a report on the city looking for proposals for the housing and mixed-use development in the Bloomington Certified Tech Park, though it mentions that this is the second time for calling out proposals.
Right.
It just kind of makes it seem like maybe the city then didn't get what they wanted the first round. Is that concerning to you?
Sure. It's not really just, it's more than the second time. And the university had tried to do some things there. We had attempted to do some things. What happens is you can get anybody to do something out there if you're willing to pay the price. And the price that was being asked of by some in the development community, it was just more than what I was willing to pay. And I think most people reasonably looking at it would agree. But the reason the cost is so high is because we are trying to have that development, the 12 acres that used to be university owned, now city owned, not simply be more student apartments and not simply be more chain restaurants, and those are the highest income producing developments, and so that's obviously why investors, developers are interested in them. We have people were lined up to do those kind of developments, but we're trying to do a mix of obviously the technology related world, but also to have locally owned stores, to have office space that serves that tech community, and more workforce affordable housing. And when you start to throw that into the mix, the developers have all said, we'll do it if you're willing to not only give us the land, but probably give us incentives. In other words, you're paying to get that. And at some point, that balance is tipped to a point where you just can't justify that kind of expenditure of taxpayer dollars. So, I mean, we could have declared success and said, we've got somebody to do it, but I just think the cost of doing that would have been too high. So what we're doing now is trying to find take a more piecemeal approach as opposed to just one developer taking the entirety of the property or a big chunk of it, is to start looking at smaller components of it. And we've got people who are interested in that, and that was very much related to the bond issuance. You know, we were very forthcoming in saying that we wanted to dedicate part of that to affordability, to the Certified Tech Park area, and affordability in terms of housing in a Certified Tech Park area, and that's where we're headed.
When I hear you use the word developer, that's different though than employer.
Yes, it really is. That's a very good point. But the people who are going to be building the buildings will be developers. They could continue to own those buildings, but again, going back to the roots of this, we made two large property acquisitions in relatively the same time. One was a 12-acre portion just outside of City Hall. The other was the 69 acres for the Switchyard Park area with two different visions. The Switchyard area will be in perpetuity publicly owned and available as we hope a park space for mostly for the south part of town, but really for the community. This area, the 12 acres, the intention is to revert that back to the private sector, but being done in a way that's developed in with a community vision in mind, not just the best bargain for the developer. And the hope is that we have a developer that would build the buildings that then smaller employers, tech employers, would want to occupy, whether that be through a purchase, lease purchase, or simply as lessors.
So then that becomes part of the developer. So obviously then that's why they come back. I'm just kind of running through this in my mind. So that's why they come back at you to say, well, okay, if that's what you want, this is what we need. Basically
absolutely.
What you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. And there are some developers who would build just what maybe something for employers in the future. But you know, we were trying to get it and still would love to get it developed as one vision. And that would include affordability when it comes to housing and to having restrictions on the property so that it not simply be all chains. And the big one in terms of housing was all developers are interested in student housing. And that's where that money is. And that's why we're seeing what's happening, not just here, but around the state, around the country, in any kind of college town. And that's that migration from campus of students into the community. And that's where the money is for the developer. But by saying no to that kind of proposal, we're driving up the cost for the project because they know they're not going to recoup their investment as quickly as they might have had they been allowed to do student apartments. So the question is, what cost are we willing to pay as stewards of taxpayer money to make that happen?
And I assume this is probably not just happening here, right, but all over.
Well, it's happening. I want to be careful how I answer that. It's happening. The housing market is in any kind of student-centric community is happening this way. But there aren't too many communities that have a downtown space, for instance, that's 12 acres. So I won't say that this, meaning that kind of development is happening, but when it comes to student housing and apartment housing, it's certainly more profitable for developers everywhere.
I wanted to go back just a little bit too. I hosted a WFIU Noon Edition on Kirkwood crime a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We had Police Chief Dekoff was one of the guests. We talked about adding the police presence, downtown resource right. officers. From your perspective now, it's been a couple months since that all kind of came up. Has anything changed? Are things working?
Well, again, an eye of the beholder. We've just heard from one of the businesses at the very center of that storm who was thanking us, thanking the police department in particular and the Downtown Resource Officer Program, saying that things have become markedly better. I've heard from others who are concerned about the level of panhandling. And, you know, I always try to ask exactly what was the panhandler doing? Because panhandling is legal within the state of Indiana. It actually is protected, some people would be surprised to learn, by the First Amendment. And you can put restrictions on it, but you can't ban it. And so aggressive panhandling is illegal, panhandling is legal. Aggressive comes in the obvious common sense definition where you can't be impeding someone's path and you can't be at an ATM machine, you can't be in the intersection, you can't be actually on a corner. There are restrictions in place, and we do encourage people to notify the police, and that's the only way this will get better. And actually, I do put, and this is a very unpopular thing to say, but I'm leaving office, so I'll say it, and that is, it's not just the panhandlers who are causing the issue, it's people giving to panhandlers. And we have so many social service agencies and so many opportunities for people to give to those agencies that then in turn provide to those in need that you don't need to give directly to a panhandler. And if that market dries up, the panhandlers will move on. So, you know, there's that kind of balance. But the broader question that the Downtown Resource Officer program is working well. We did do more saturation patrols on Kirkwood. We do that almost every summer. But that problem will ebb and flow.
And this came up more recently, but those resource officers have been out. That's something you came up with, right? I mean, a year or so ago?
Yeah,
I mean,
we put that in, Chief Dekoff, and I announced it, probably 15 months ago or so,
yeah.
And we've took volunteers from within the police department, and those officers received special training. I believe have made very special connections with people in the community, both on the street, but also with the social service providers, and we've been able to see the level of arrests of many of the people who were still working with on the street. The level of arrests has gone significantly down because we're able to intercede and prevent problems before they happen, divert problems to social service agencies as opposed to the jail. And you know this won't stop. There's no place in the country where it has just stopped. It does get better. And you can make it better, and I think that's something that the community is invested in doing, literally and figuratively. It's a civically minded community, a charitably minded community, and we're also known for having invested financially. I mean, taxpayer money has gone into social service agencies that are providing for those in need on the streets and in the community, and the way in which this gets solved, to the extent it can be solved, is to prevent the problem to begin with.
I believe this is a contract year for the police department.
Right.
When does that the current contract end, and how are negotiations moving along?
Yeah, we're already to a point where we're operating under the past with the Evergreen Clause in the contract, and this is almost the new face of contract negotiations. It's been slow, somewhat steady. And we actually had discussions, a meeting last week, and proposals, counter-proposals going back and forth. I think some progress has been made, but the reason I say it's kind of the new day, new face of contract negotiations is once municipalities found revenue sources beginning to constrict, it made negotiations much tougher. So understandably, a union is upset when you propose a 0% salary increase in a first year of a contract and then increases in subsequent years. That's not the way it used to be. So AFSCME, where many of our city employees, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees Union, they got a 0% in their first year of the contract. Firefighters had a 0% their first year, and that's been talked about with the police contract. And again, 0% doesn't mean no increase in benefit. You still have insurance costs and things that are being defrayed by the public, and there are other benefits, but salary is where things have changed, and it's disturbing. Those are all dangerous jobs. It's not just the public safety jobs, but even those AFSCME jobs. Go look at any road construction project. Go look at any utilities project. There are risks inherent to the job that many of our employees who are not even the public safety sector employees face day to day. So it's certainly not for lack of wanting to compensate them better, but we had a 0% increase for non-union employees a few years back, and when these contracts came up, as in a sense of being equitable with all of our employees and the fact that there's just a money reality we have to deal with, that's been proposed and successfully passed with AFSCME and FIRE, and we'll see what happens with the police contract.
When you said evergreen, so right now they're in a period of, they're not in a contract, but they're staying with what was there previously?
Yeah, their contract still applies.
It just applies. And when did that, is that a July 1st?
Those contracts are negotiated different years and different terms, and I don't remember the exact month. So that's an important point that we'll make.
Last question. We'll go ahead and finish up. And this comes from Gerald, who emailed in yesterday. He wants to know, how is the Monroe County Energy Challenge going? What is the City of Bloomington doing in the Energy Challenge to reduce the natural gas and electric utility energy usage of its residents?
Yeah, I honestly don't know how the challenge has gone. What we've done through our sustainability effort, Jackie Bauer is the city's sustainability director, and we just had the challenge being made even within the city government. So we've got our own challenge, an intra-city challenge going on right now, asking employees to come up with ideas by which we can reduce not only consumption but cost. I mean, that cost factor is important. So, it's amazing how far things have come. That literally, when I first was elected 12 years ago, I went back and looked. The word sustainability was not used by any candidate in any of the elections. And then subsequently, the first person was Dave Rollo talking about it, and peak oil, and people honestly rolled their eyes and thought, why are we worrying about this? And then gas prices went up, and suddenly people started to tune in to, this is a real pocketbook issue as well as an environmental and an equity issue. So we started to reduce the consumption of fuel. We've instituted electric vehicles where possible, flex fuel vehicles, and hybrid vehicles. We've reduced the consumption of electricity in our buildings with more modern systems. We're installing LED lights all over town. And that, in fact, that was part of the bond issuance, was to have LED installations. This building, City Hall, eventually, as we change out this roof of the building, will have solar panels. So I jokingly said, if it's got lights or a roof, you're going to see LED or solar. And it's become part of the every year consideration in our budget preparation, whereas when I first was elected, it just wasn't being talked about. So I think as a community, we've stepped up to the challenge and can always find new ways to do better.
And lastly, what do you have? What's new?
Yeah, the biggest thing in city government for us this past week has been that we are proposing to convey the old retired fire station on South Rogers Street, 115 South Rogers, and to turn it into the Lotus Arts Center. It's very similar to the model that was used years back to take the old Waldron, the old fire station, give it to the Waldron and the BAAC. And then when the BAAC went out of existence, the building reverted. We sold it for $1 to Ivy Tech in exchange for an agreement that it be operated as a public arts facility, and has done so successfully for, 7 years. So we're using that very same model. And for many years, I've wanted to have a capital investment in BEAD, the Bloomington Entertainment Arts District. And that building was a prime candidate for it. It was underutilized and then eventually vacated building. And so we are going to offer to convey that building to Lotus. Lotus will use it not just for the festival, which we all identify with the organization, but as a year-round art center to increase accessibility to the arts. It's obviously the number of shared values that Lotus and the city have are pretty remarkable when it comes to the arts, access to the arts, support of the arts as an economic development tool in the community, a commitment to downtown, and then of course to BEAD itself. And it's been a large part of our economic development effort was to make downtown a destination attraction, to increase foot traffic that supports all businesses, not just the arts. And we think that this will be really a perfect fit.
And just to refresh my memory, this was up in the media a few months ago, and a few others wanted it for different things.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously what you're just saying is that outweighs those factors in terms of this is the number one thing and how they could benefit the community.
Yeah, and there actually are other arts-related agencies that have been interested in that. All have had wonderful ideas for the building. We just found the Lotus fit to be the best. There were some non-art related, those were it didn't make sense to us in terms of we wanted to promote the economy in downtown, as I say, increase foot traffic, make downtown even more of a destination attraction. So that was the primary consideration that we went forward, and that's been in the works, gosh, for 5-7 years we've talked about that, to try to have a capital investment within the boundaries of BEAD, and Lotus stepped up with a wonderful proposal. It does have to go before the Board of Public Works to convey the building. There will be two restrictions. One is that it must be operated as a publicly accessible arts center, which of course Lotus, that's second nature to them, that's what they do, but also as a clawback provision that should Lotus choose not to do that or not be able to do that, the building's ownership would revert to city government, a la the Waldron. And that's exactly what did happen with the Waldron, and we want to protect the interest of the community long term. So there are protections built into the conveyance agreement, and Lotus has very willingly accepted those terms and has really made this work. An awful lot of I would have loved to have done this with them 5 years ago or so, but they were really to the point. They weren't to the point yet where they wanted to take a building, so they've continued to lease and just evolved like all organizations you hope will. And much like the festival itself, Lotus the organization has evolved to proportions that Lee Williams never could have dreamed of when he first conceived of Lotus. And Sunny Foss, the current executive director, the timing has just been perfect with her coming into the position to evolve the organization.